and welcome to Tiny Voice Talks with me, Tori Bono. And today, Tiny Voice is talking about outside noise. You know, that noise that you hear that tells you you should do something or you should do this thing, and actually you don't know whether you need to pay attention to it. And sometimes ignoring that outside noise takes confidence. And I am joined by someone that, you know, has proven track record of ignoring outside noise and doing what she wants. And that is Lucy Griffiths. So welcome, Lucy.
Hello, Toria. It's lovely to be here.
So nice to have you here, Lucy. And we have been threatening to do this podcast together for ages, haven't we?
I know. It's been a little bit of a sort of like one of those things that we just keep meaning to do and it just hasn't happened. And I'm actually quite shocked it's actually happening now.
And listeners, we did have a bit of a technical issue, so there was a potential that it wasn't going to happen. And we've managed to overcome all of those issues to be here right now together, which is fantastic. Now, for anyone that hasn't come across you, Lucy, who is Lucy Griffiths?
So I am a primary school teacher. I have been at the school that I've been at for my whole career. I did my teaching practice there and I've worked there ever since, which is really what my chapter in the Tiny Voice Talks book is about. I came to teaching a little bit later. I sort of trained at 24 and I love my job, but I have very, very clearly wanted to just be a teacher. And when I say just, it's that thing where people go, oh, I'm just a mother, I'm just a housewife. You sort of use that word sort of to explain that you know that that maybe not be something that other people think of. And that's what I sort of like wanted to talk about, really. It's that sort of pressure from that outside to be more than just something.
Yeah. And I recently talked to Oliver Wright about that, the fact within our profession, we feel that there is this ladder that we need to scale and we need to go up the ladder. And there's that it does feel like outside noise saying, oh, when are you going to go for this? When are you going to go for this? When are you moving school? When are you doing this? And actually, you have not only remained at your own school, but actually you're really established there. So has there been outside noise and pressure to move on and do other things?
Absolutely. And I totally bowed to that at one point. I mean, I was in my job and I loved it. And I'd have my sort of like staff chats yearly with, you know, like, and my head teacher would say, Lucy, you need to move on. There's not really any opportunity for you if you want to, you know, grow and be a deputy head or anything. And I was like, no, I'm happy. And then eventually my mum was like, you know, you'd be brilliant at this and you'd be brilliant at that. And my husband was like, come on, you could do that. You've got these ideas and this, that and the other. And you totally and utterly start listening to what other people are saying. And so a deputy headship came up at a school near me, which I'd actually done my second teaching practice at. And I just thought, well, maybe this is a sign. Everyone's telling me I need to move on. I'm really good in my role, but maybe I should be offering more. And I went for the interview and I really just got swept away with what everyone else thought. And I'm one of these people that's very, very strong about what I believe. And I don't usually do that. But in your career, you sometimes do get caught up in that sort of wave. And I turned up at the interview and I did everything I needed to do. And, you know, I did the best that I could. And when I had the interview with the head, the second part of the interview, she said, we're not going to take this forward with you because we know that you don't want this. And I just thought, how interesting that I felt like I had really tried. And I was slightly disappointed because although I didn't want it, I wanted them to want me. It's so pathetic, isn't it? And she said, you'll be great somewhere one day. She said, but this isn't what you want right now. And I went back to my school and I was a little bit bruised. My ego was a bit bruised and I was a bit embarrassed. And to be fair, my head was amazing. She said, I'm really pleased you're staying. And she sort of, she gave me a TLR. And she said, listen, we're going to develop you as a sort of like as a teacher to stay, which was lovely because she recognised what I, you know, what I hopefully bring to the school. And I've sort of stayed at the school and developed my role as like the wellbeing and pastoral care. And I've really established a role with that. I lead the literacy. So I feel like I have lots of little strings to my bow, but it doesn't mean that I'm necessarily flying as high as maybe other people feel that you should. But for me, I'm really content.
And that's what it's got to be about, hasn't it? Being content.
Yeah, I mean, I think teaching is a profession where there can never be enough hours to do everything that you do. Mm. And for me, as I've got older, I mean, I really do believe that when you hit your 40s, you are able to say no far more frequently and know that people aren't going to dislike you for it. Mm-hmm. You know your own mind, you know what you want. And as I've got older, I'll be 47 in April, I just feel like I've got a really good balance. I've got a great job. I love my role. I'm good at my role, but I've got a great work-life balance as well. And for me, that's the key. I mean, we work so many hours, don't we, as teachers?
Absolutely do. What I was thinking of actually when you were talking about, now I visited your school and I was thinking about your values, because actually you fit in your school, don't you? Like you are a perfect puzzle piece in there. But your school is slightly different from a number of schools, isn't it?
I mean, I think so. It's, I have an incredible head teacher. Mm. She's been there forever. She's all about believing in completely creating a fun and immersive and safe environment for the children, which I'm sure all primary schools have that ethos. But the way our timetable is conducted is very different. When people come and visit, they can't understand how it works. And there's a lot of dressing up in role.
I remember that. That struck me. I went and you were all dressed up.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And then I was shown the room of outfits.
Yeah, the dressing up cupboard.
And I was like, wow. Like, wow. It really is quite something. Yeah. And I wonder, no, I might be wrong here, but do you think one of the reasons you've stayed is because you do fit into that place? That is the perfect place. And there wouldn't be a school quite like it just down the road.
I mean, we're very small. We're a one form entry, 210 children. We've all been there a long time. I don't want to sound corny, but we are like a little family. We know each other so well. If I didn't believe still in the ethos of what my head teacher's created, I couldn't stay there. And I think, you know, people walk in, most people love it. Some people are overwhelmed by the colour, the displays. It's completely open plan. So the whole mm-hmm. thing is, we don't have a wall, which sounds crazy. And at times when you're trying to do something quiet can be challenging. But it has to be seen to be believed, I think. And I think we're all basically wannabe children's TV presenters and got lucky in a school we're allowed to show off and dress up and be silly.
But that is right for you. Yeah. And I think that's what's wonderful, that is right for you. And you have allowed yourself to remain in that space knowing that.
Yeah, I mean, you meet a lot of other teachers who work in other places, and on teacher Twitter, I mean, some of the emails, some of the think comments that people make about what's happening in their school. And I just don't experience those things. I wake up on a Monday and I am ready to go to school. I love my job. I'm not saying it comes with that. It's challenges. This year has probably been has been the hardest year I've ever had. I lost my dad. I've had some stuff going on, but actually the safety of being somewhere where you know that you are valued, you know that you are doing a good job, you're trusted, and you are genuinely really cared about by the colleagues, the parents, and the children is a pretty perfect mix in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those teachers out there that are like, oh, you know, I do feel though that I should progress.
Yeah.
But they want to stay in the place that they're at. What would you suggest?
I would just say that you know in your heart, like your gut tells you something for a reason. And unfortunately in life, we all ignore our gut. I've done it a few times, a very few times. One was the headship. One was in another job when I was moving away from where I lived and I didn't feel right about it. And I was absolutely right. Listen to your gut, because if you are happy and you are making a difference, and you know, I know we're all, you know, everyone's talking about going on strike and that we don't earn enough money, but teaching is a really great job. I would also say if you're not happy, leave, because a toxic environment in a toxic school doesn't necessarily mean you don't want to be a teacher. And I feel really strongly about that. You've got to find your place in your tribe. And that might not be where you are at the moment. It may be where you are at the moment, but having a supportive network of friends and colleagues and, you know, a senior leadership team that support you is really, it shouldn't be a difficult mix, but it when you find it, don't throw it away for something because you think you should be doing more. Because to be honest, I could go and get a deputy headship. I'm sure I could go and get a deputy headship tomorrow, and I'd probably earn about 45p more a month. It's not worth it to leave what I've got. And you've got to sort of like weigh it up and think, what do I want? Listen to that inner voice for yourself. And B, ignore what's going on around you, because you know what's best for you, and your friends, your family, they love you and they think you're the best thing since sliced bread, but they don't know what you do on an everyday level. So you've got to weigh those things up, because once you make that move, it could be great. It might not be great. And I just think there are so many people unhappy in a job where actually, we shouldn't be unhappy. We're making such a brilliant, brilliant impact on children's lives. And, you know, it can be tough, and you've got to be somewhere where your heart sings, I think.
Wow. That was very motivational. That really was. I'm like, wow. It really was. You know, all the listeners are sitting up now. All their little banners. But I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. And what I was thinking as you were talking is teaching is rather like, you know, that moment. Now, if you're female and you've just got married, what happens almost a month to the day after you've got married is someone will come up to you and say, oh, so when are you expecting then?
Yeah.
You know, and it's really bizarre. And then once you've had your first child, they say, so when's the second coming?
Yeah.
It's like really, I remember it just being the oddest thing. But it's the same with teaching. You become a qualified teacher and people go, so when are you going for subject leadership?
Yeah.
And then you become a subject leadership and people are like, so either when you become a year leader or so when are you moving to another school?
Absolutely.
And then you move to another school and, you know, get another post and people go, so when are you going to be doing your, there are so many MPQ nows, you know, it's the MPQS, you get the MPQML. When are you doing that? When are you doing your MPQSL? When are you doing your MPQH? And it's like, there's this continual, it's the outside noise of when are you? Yeah. When are you going to? When are you going to? And no one seems to say, are you content? Are you happy? Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. And nothing's ever enough for everybody.
No.
Say, it's like, I've got the one, you know, I had that all the time. I've only got one child. And
yeah, as have I.
Yeah. And I, you know, could only have one child. And so that whole questioning of when are you going to have another child? When are you going to do this? When are you going to do that? They're such loaded questions. And I'm just very aware of, like, with particularly with teaching, probably because of my own experience, I don't ever say, oh, when are you going to do this? Because it doesn't have to be that. And I don't know about you, but when I think of like who I am and what I am, being a teacher is such an intrinsic part of who I am. And without yeah. it, I'm not sure who I obviously know lots of other things about myself, but being a teacher is such an important part of who and what I am.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to be a deputy, which to be fair, I did do for a year when the other deputy went off on maternity leave, and I hated it. I hated telling other adults what to do. I can tell a million children what to do, but I don't like having to like direct adults. It just makes me feel quite uncomfortable. And also, if I wanted to do a deputy headship, it means more paperwork. It means more time out of the classroom. And what I got into this to do was to be with children. Like when the chips are down and life is tough and you're feeling a bit low, being with kids is the best medicine. You have to put on that facade of being okay. And for that moment, that it can lift you from times when life can be tricky. And I just think there's not very many other jobs where you have to just, you know, sort yourself out and get on and make yourself feel better. And children give you such a lift.
They really do. They also laugh at my jokes. Yeah. And I deeply appreciate that.
I do too. My son, who's 19, says to me, he said, Mum, the only people that find you funny are 10-year-old children. I was like, I'll take it. I will take it.
Yeah. I was having that conversation with my daughter this week because I told her the same thing that I told my children. And she said, yeah, it's not funny, Mum. I said, my class laughed. And then and but you're right, there is something really special for me about teaching that I didn't find in leadership. Now I actually think that that's because my personality isn't cut out to be, you know, I loved certain aspects of leadership, I really did, like I loved the developing other teachers, and that's why I've done the coaching diploma. I absolutely love that aspect.
Yeah.
I didn't like, as you said, that directing and holding to account. And
yeah.
That didn't sit with me. And I was very uncomfortable doing it. And I think that probably came out in the way that I did it, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
It wasn't a fit with me. But actually, I know, I remember meeting a head teacher once who just went, oh my goodness, it's the best job in the world. I just love being a head teacher. And for her, it was a perfect fit. She adored it. And I think what you're saying is we need to find what works for us. And actually, if headship works for people, fantastic. If assistant headship works for people, fantastic. Yeah. But for you and me,
yeah.
we both know that actually we get deep joy from just teaching our little ones yeah. and them laughing at our jokes.
Yeah, exactly. And that for me is enough. I'm okay.
Yeah. I mean, there is something really, I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, and I'm so sorry about your dad and losing your dad. I remember when I lost mine, which is now about 16 years ago, that I returned to work pretty quickly.
Mm.
Because actually work was somewhere
yeah.
where I could lose myself is the wrong expression, but I could focus on the little people around me
yeah.
and actually I could focus on their needs and what they needed at that moment, which just allowed me time to heal in a sense.
Yeah.
And I think that I know that sounds really bizarre, but I do find that for me, when I walk into my classroom, I'm walking into a slightly different world mm. where I can be, I don't know, that in a sense, the troubles and strifes of daily living are outside my classroom door. Because
yeah.
as soon as I am Mrs. Bono, the teacher, it's different.
Yeah, absolutely. And my dad died in the summer holidays very, very at the beginning of the summer holidays, was in one respect, it was lovely because I had that 6 weeks to sort of like be with my family and just look after my mum, which we all needed. And I did. I ummed and ahed about whether I was ready to go back to work. But for me, going back to work was exactly what I needed because a bit like you, I needed to get on. And, you know, like grief is one of those things that sort of like it doesn't go. It sort of it sits within you and it flares up and it's dormant and it shouts at you and it whispers and it does all those strange things that grief does. But for me, getting back and having that structure of a day was massively, massively therapeutic for me. And I think for like I really enjoy the structure of like my life when I'm at school. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love a holiday, but particularly when you feel overwhelmed and maybe not coping as well as you possibly could be, the structure of knowing how a school day works, what's coming, what you need to do is a safety net, I think.
It really is. And I was talking to my head about this the other day because, you know, her days, as much as she might want them structured, they're not. No. They may well have meetings in them, but she'll be dealing with this thing or that thing or the other thing. And I joked with her the other day. I said, you need to be a teacher. I said, because teaching's great. I said, because I've just got my little timetable and I follow the structure of my day.
Yeah.
But actually, what I also love is there is the fluidity within teaching, Lucy, to just follow that moment.
Yeah.
To just and I know, you know, your school, you've talked about that creativity and that it's so important. We have that ability to just follow that moment and just actually go with the flow.
Yeah. And sometimes you sort of like, you're talking to the children, you're telling them things, you're explaining what you want.
Yeah.
And then they come back. And like this week, I had a little moan at my class. I was like, you know, we need to put a bit more effort in. And, you know, I feel like sometimes I'm putting more effort in than you. And I say these things. And then this week, there's like children who have gone, like so many children gone above and beyond. There are notes in reading records where parents have made comments about something that I might have said to them in a really positive way. And I think, Christ, I do actually, somebody listens to me. And you sometimes forget the power of you and what you bring to the table and what you, like, what you mean to these children. And I just think, God, aren't we blessed to be, you know, doing the job that we do, but it's so important. And like yesterday, we finished our book study, which was Rooftoppers.
And great book.
My children were lying on, because I'd say to them, get comfy. So they lie on under tables, they sit on chairs, they lean against the wall, they curl up in little balls, you know, they twiddle their hair, whatever they do to listen to the story. And as we finished the story, you know, as we were going through the last bit of the chapter, they're going, and they're playing Rooftoppers on the playground. You think, God, I just get so excited that we can make them excited about education. I sound like an absolute loon. I've been doing this nearly 20 years, but that never gets old.
But that's what I love about you, your enthusiasm and your love for teaching. And that's why I love the chapter, because it is, let's ignore the outside noise and do what makes us happy.
Yeah.
And while you're talking, what dawned on me is I just thought, do you know what? We are children's outside noise and we have a lot of power in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they really pay attention to what we're saying and what we're doing. And we need to really consider that.
Yeah. Yeah. Our words are very, very powerful. And those flippant things that you might say, like they last, don't they? You've got to be really aware of what you're saying and how you deliver it and what your expectation is. You know, I just think children remember things. They remember people. They, you know, we have a real responsibility, don't we?
Absolutely. I remember being greeted one day in the middle of the town by someone that I'd taught a number of years beforehand. And And it was really funny because she said, "Oh, it's so lovely to see you, Mrs. Bono." And I went, "Oh, hello, how are you doing?" She said, "Oh, I'm so grateful for your nagging." And I went, "Oh." She said, "Do you know the way you always went on about handwriting?" And I went, "Yeah." Because you see, I've got a bit of a thing about handwriting, because I really do believe that if we teach children to write in a fluent way, actually that removes it from working memory, which allows children then to unlock other things. Yeah. So I've got a bit of a thing about handwriting. So she said, "Yeah, I'm so pleased for about your nagging." And I said, "Oh, why?" She said, "Well, all your nagging meant that I was able to finally write in a way that was like, you know, meant that I wasn't focusing on my handwriting anymore. And then I started focusing on other things. And now I've done all sorts of things, and I've got into the school that I wanted to, and I've done the GCSEs I wanted to, and now I've gone on to the A-levels that I wanted to. And, you know, I've applied for university."
Oh,
and I'm like, lovely. And I went, "Well, that's wonderful." She said, "And that's all down to your nagging."
Oh.
And I thought, "Well, I don't know that I want to be remembered for nagging."
Backhanded compliment.
But it's really funny because, you know, I just thought, wow. And that, you know, I suppose my outside noise with her was my nagging on about handwriting. But it was just really funny I thought she's remembered all these years ago.
Yeah.
That I used to bang on about handwriting. Yeah. I still do, everyone. I just, you know, my current class will tell you I still do.
Yeah.
But they thank me for it.
Yeah. And I am, you know, I am not a fluffy teacher. I've got very high expectations. I expect a lot from them. And they probably think when they first come into year five, "Oh God, she's a absolute monster." Because I'm like, "No, I'm not going to accept that. No, that's not, no, you need, and my nag, I'm a nag. And I think, again, I nag, but only if I know that they can do it. Like, I'm very aware of who does not need to be nagged, because that's what their level is. But there's also those kids that, you know, try it on and they just try and do the bare minimum. And that's when you nag to the ability that they can reach.
Yes. Absolutely. You're spot on, because I think, you know, and also given your, you know, length of experience in the classroom, you know immediately who can do what. Yeah. You know, I'm sure, I mean, I'm incredibly grateful. I'm now 23 years teaching, and actually that allows me to pick things up pretty quickly from my class, and I'm able to see who can do what, who can't do what I need to do in order to move them on. And I think that experience, I mean, you just can't buy it, can you?
No. And I think that I came into teaching as a mum, and I'm not saying that you don't know these things, but my son, who was incredibly dyslexic and had a pretty mixed experience at primary school and a little bit at secondary school. And so my experience of being a mum with a child with dyslexia has definitely benefited me, because it's just an experience, isn't it? And I'm not saying it's about being a mum, but it's about like your life experiences coming into things, being a child of parents who had been divorced, and being, you know, experiences in life just impact who you are and how you react to things and how you empathize with children. And, you know, one of my favorite things to teach is PSHCE. I absolutely love it. I love how honest the children are. And I find it such an honor to teach the subject, because they just open up and have conversations, you know. And I just think what makes me really sad as well is that in year five and six already, so in upper key stage two, how many children don't open up to parents and ones that they love, but they disclose to you stuff. I think, you know, it's when do we learn that we shouldn't be open about our feelings? And it seems to be younger and younger.
But I think it is. And I think, again, that comes down to the outside noise.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's an awful lot of outside noise for our young children to contend with.
Yeah.
And they're trying to fit into this I'll go back to puzzles, but this piece of the puzzle that they think is them. And actually, it's really tricky for them to navigate. I love teaching PSHC because, in a sense, I think I'm helping them with that roadmap. I'm helping them to navigate. I mean, emotional literacy is so important.
Yeah.
It's, in my opinion, it's just as important.
I agree.
As academic, you know, because actually we have to navigate our way through life. You know, you've talked very honestly about grief.
Mm.
And I know when I was navigating my dad's death, it was hard. I wasn't quite sure what to do. I had feelings coming up all over the place.
Yeah.
And it is tricky and it is hard. And we have children in our classrooms who are navigating all sorts of things at the moment. And, you know, we need to help them.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is so much outside noise, but I think we need to be that powerful voice that is supporting, helping and holding them up.
Yeah. I mean, I used the most amazing book on last week. I used the Bottle Book. You know, by the Brassingham brothers.
Oh, yes.
And so they all created their own bottles and they all wrote in their all the things that they bottle up and they don't talk to. And I said, you can show me, you can not show me. It doesn't matter. I said, if you want to keep it, put it in your tray. If you want to give it to me and I'll look after it and I won't look at it, tell me. And if you don't mind me looking at it, let me know. So there were lots of options. And then next week I'm bringing my fire pit in and we're going to burn the bottles. They're not real bottles, they're pieces of paper. And we're going to put that out into the universe so that that takes it away from them. And they're so excited by that.
I think that's such a lovely thing to do. It really is.
And that's the thing with PSHC. You can be, you know, you can deliver that how you want to and take your lead from the children, can't you? And I think, again, as a teacher that's been in the profession for a long time, you totally trust yourself to make these decisions. And that's, again, what I love about being an experienced teacher, that one, I am trusted. Two, I trust myself. And three, I can change things up and do things differently because I have that confidence and know where I stand within that school that I'm allowed to do those things. And I think that, again, is a really great feeling to have as a teacher.
Yeah, it really is. Oh, I hope if you're listening to this, listeners, I mean, we've talked about so many different things. And the great thing, what I love about my podcast episodes is they are entirely unstructured. I've said this a number of times, but you've now experienced it, Lucy. There is no structure at all. We have a title and that's about it.
Yeah.
But it's really great the way just starting from that conversation about outside noise and where we are as professionals has led us to write back really to why we both love teaching and why we are there and actually what it has equipped us with. And fundamentally, it comes back to the children and it comes back to what we are able to give the children.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. I mean, there's all these people that sort of go, oh, I might become a teacher because of the holidays. I might become a teacher because I earn loads of money and I this, that, and the other. And this is a vocation. It's like nursing. It's a vocation. If you are not in it for the right reasons, you're not going to enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy it, there's no point. We've all been taught by teachers who shouldn't be working with children. There's too many of them. We all remember that teacher who made our lives miserable. And I would say, like, if you can be that person that makes one child make a difference in one child's life, then I think you've done a great job.
Yeah. And that brings me beautifully, it's as if we've segued in there to the book, because actually the Tiny Voices Talk book, we start off with being that teacher. And I do mention some of the demonic teachers that I had. And you don't know this, Lucy, but, or you might, it's very exciting. We have a discount code for podcast listeners.
Ooh.
On the book. I know. How exciting is that?
Very
exciting. So if they go to Crown House or Independent Thinking and they put in the code TINY30, they get 30% off the book.
Wow. Okay.
I know. How exciting is that?
Right.
I will put, listeners, the link in the show notes so that you can get that 30% off. And in the book, we've got so many different chapters. We've got Lucy's fabulous chapter, but we've got so many others, because the idea is that you can dip in, dip out. You can actually find what you need in that moment. So yeah, there's so much to it, isn't there, Lucy?
Oh, it's an incredible book. I loved reading everyone's chapters, and then meeting some of the contributors last weekend at the launch was just bizarre, to actually see people face to face, but so incredible.
Yeah. Now let's talk about that teacher. If you could have been taught, Lucy, by anyone, they can be real, fictional, dead, alive, who would have been your perfect teacher?
I mean, I was always a little bit of a swot. I loved school. I loved every aspect of primary and secondary. I loved university. I loved it all. I loved learning. And I was lucky enough to be taught by an incredible teacher, an English teacher at secondary school called Mrs. Summers, Helen Summers. Mm. And she, I was a kid who was really, I was really good, but I was probably a bit lazy. I loved a little bit of a chat. I loved a little bit of a like social life. But she saw potential in me, and she totally believed me. And I was having a really tough time at home, sort of like at that 14, 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
And she nurtured me, and she believed in me, and she told me that I could write, and everything that I did, she coached me. And she is totally the reason that I wanted to become a teacher, because she completely made a difference in my life. And about 6 or 7 years after I qualified as a teacher, I bumped into her in a restaurant in Arundel.
Oh, wow.
I was like a giddy kipper. I was like, hi, Mrs. Summers. Hi. I just want to let you know that I'm a teacher, and it's all because of you. And she probably thought, get away from me, you nutter. But I was so excited to see her, because I just wanted her to know the impact that she'd had. And I mean, she was amazing. And I've tried to find her since on like social media, but I can't find her. But she really did. She was tough. She wasn't easy. She didn't take any, you know, prisoners, but she believed in me. And at that point in my life, I needed somebody to believe. And that nurturing feeling of a teacher that knows and cares and wants you to do your best, is that's what teaching is about. And so she's my person.
I love that. Helen Summers would be an absolutely fabulous addition to the Tiny Voice Talks.
She would.
It really would.
Yeah.
Now, listeners, to find out how to connect with Lucy on Twitter, it will be in the show notes, plus the links for the book. And it leaves me to just say thank you so much, Lucy, for coming on Tiny Voice Talks and talking to us about outside noise.
Thank you so much for the invite. It's been lovely. I feel like all we're missing now is just a coffee and face to face.
We need to do that soon.
We do.